Joe Stazak on 97.5, The Fanatic.
Anyway, all right, on the Comcast Business Hotline right now, he is my podcast partner. It's posted on Facebook. It's also on YouTube, also on his page, Speaking of Sports with Steve Callis. He is the great one. What's up, Steven? How you doing, my friend? Stevie there, bro? Wait. Stevie there, bro?
Your legend goes far and wide. That's what it has to be.
No, I'm not even saying it for that reason. It's just weird. Like, I don't know these guys. It has to
be. Well, the people I get to be friends, I can't even pronounce their names.
Right?
I'm not kidding. I can't even read them. But it's something, you know, you're in the big league.
Yeah, well, not quite. But how you doing, man? Good to talk to you tonight. You know, I know we always text during the game. It was a mess. I know you were watching some other games. I was watching the Giants, Frisco, and this mess. And I could see it heading for a tie, which to me...
You did. You sent me a text. That's right.
Oh, my God. I don't do ties. It was a tie. I know they gained ground, so technically, okay. It actually helped them gain ground in the East. But, I mean, what a mess. I mean, they can't beat the Bengals. And, again, I said don't give the points. Take the points if you could.
You did.
Unbelievable. What'd you think?
But we did talk last week about how terrible the NFC East is, and now we know how terrible it is. The San Francisco JV crushes the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just embarrassing how bad they are.
Yep.
And I think, you know, maybe the Eagles might be okay against them because no Kittle. Now, they might have kept him out because of that turf problem they had at MetLife Stadium. Remember, San Francisco played 2 weeks in a row.
Right.
And they had bitter complaints. Supposedly, they looked at the field. But they kept everybody, Garoppolo, you know, like Bosa's out for the season now. So
yeah, mm-hmm.
They're not quite the same team, although, again, they were, you know, the Giants are just horrifically bad. But I just wanted to go, no Nick Foles jokes, but you talked about what he did today. So he had 3 touchdown passes and 1 interception. The interception was he threw a ball into the end zone. Allen Robinson and his team went up and caught it. And between the time he caught it and the time he came down, the DB stole it out of his hands.
Unbelievable.
And the other thing is, and this is another Nick Foles thing, they're down 16, they score a touchdown, and they go for 2, of course, and they don't make it, and they still come back and win the game, Joe. I mean, what this guy can do, I don't know if he can do it for whole years, but what this guy can do is just, it's incredible. But in terms of Carson Wentz, just a couple of things in the overtime. 7:52 left, first down from their own 11. Play action, a little pressure, not a lot, and Wentz almost hit this Jesse Bates right in the hands. Did you see the one where Bates kind of leaned back to try and catch it?
He almost hit him in his gut.
And the game's over.
The game's over if that happened. It's done.
Okay, so a little later now, 5:32 left. They're driving the ball down the field. That beautiful touch pass to Ertz down the sideline.
Yep.
Now, I think they've overdone it now where the field goal thing is. I think in the old days they had it, like, reasonable, but this one was at the 43, which means you got... Not that he can't kick a 60-yarder, because he can. We've seen him do it.
Sure.
That's a little, you know, you don't want to be there. But they get to the 43, and what happens? They get a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Then they get it to the 42, and then Wentz runs to the 33. To me, it's the Atlanta Super Bowl. The game is over, right?
Right. Exactly.
But there's that holding penalty, Nate Herbig.
That hurt.
That drives him back. And then 2nd and 19, he's got to throw it away. 3rd and 19, not even close on a wheel route. At that point, I'm not saying this would have worked, but you might have been better running 2 draw plays, because if you can get back to that line or a little inside the line, not the 33, but the low 40s,
right?
You got a guy, Elliott can make these field goals now. You know, it's not like the old days where it's you're not going to make them. These guys routinely make 50-yarders, 52-yarders, 55-yarders. Gostkowski, who couldn't get arrested in week 1, missed 4 kicks.
I remember.
He kicked 6 field goals today in a 55-yarder to win the game. I mean, that's not so crazy anymore. So I think they had their opportunities. You can't blame Wentz for the penalties, of course. But my goodness, the throws, the give-ups on 2nd and 19, maybe yes. 3rd and 19, you got to give your guy a chance to catch it. Because if you don't, obviously, and then, you know, that's another thing. 3rd and 19, you got to throw it 20 yards, 25 yards. If you get a 15-yard completion, the game's over.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very disappointing. And, you know, we've talked a lot, you and I, in the podcast about Joe Burrow. Here's another game, 31 for 44, 312 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. In 3 games, he's a rookie. He's got 821 yards, Five TDs, one pick. He's completing 64% of his passes. Rookies don't do that.
Wow.
Sorry. And he's playing for the Bengals. He's not like one of those rookies who got lucky and got onto a really good team.
Right, sure.
He's not Dak Prescott, for example.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't know where they go. Was there any analysis on Peters afterwards?
Yeah, he was terrible. Yeah, that's the
no,
analysis.
No. Is he really injured?
I have not heard, to be honest. But he was bad in the first half. He got it, came around a little bit in the second half. He was not good today. It wasn't good.
Yeah, and then I think the next time they had the ball, tell me if I'm wrong, they had a false start later with Matt Pryor had a false start. I thought they might have been in field goal range then or a close to, I mean, it's just penalties, delay a game penalty, really? I mean, that was later. I think that was on purpose. That's when they had
that
the
was.
Punt.
That was on the punt. They
yeah, but maybe before that they could have kicked. Again, like a 58, 59-yarder, right. I think in overtime you take your chances.
They do, but Pryor went on. Pryor jumps. Where's he going? What's the rush?
It's you know the snap count.
You know the snap count.
The crowd isn't screaming.
No, you know, you're at home, and even if you were on the road, you got cardboard cutouts. I mean, you should be able, you don't need to go on a silent count. It was ridiculous.
The only good thing that came out today is they're in a horrific division, which we talked about last week. And they are. It's one of the worst divisions, I think, in, like, football history. Dallas has so much talent. They're very lucky to beat Atlanta last week. They came back and played well today. But, you know, the magician, as we call him, is the MVP so far. If you watch this guy every week, you can't believe it.
Incredible.
He throws five touchdowns like other guys throw two touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, mentioned it. I don't know if you heard me. He set a record, 14 touchdowns in the first 3 weeks of a season is a record. He's got 14 right now.
Yeah, maybe he wants to break Peyton Manning's record. I don't know, because they want a pound, it seems, but maybe because they run it, you know, it makes it easier for him to throw. But he's a once-in-a-lifetime. You know, you can't really copy what he does. He's so good. And he slides when he has to. He doesn't seem to get hurt. It's just incredible how good this guy is. And you're right, he's a small guy. But after 3 weeks, for what that's worth, he's the MVP.
Hasn't missed a game yet in the league. Hasn't missed
incredible.
A game. Was drafted 82nd overall. Unbelievable. All right, Steve. So, again, the quarterback, he made a gorgeous, what was it? The touchdown pass was a very sweet pass. Although it was blown coverage, the Greg Ward touchdown, they went right down
yep.
the field. Otherwise,
yep.
the two picks, the almost pick that you mentioned,
yeah.
and he overthrows Miles Sanders, that's a pitch and catch. I mean,
absolutely. He had a couple of steps. He didn't just have a little daylight. He
mm-hmm.
had a couple of steps. You know, he made two great throws, the one to Ward and the one to Ertz down the sidelines. I thought the game was over when he hit that one, because
mm-hmm.
they were right at the field goal, which, again, is a 60-yarder. But they were right there. All they have to do is go forward a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not quite the Falcons in the Super Bowl, but it's in the neighborhood. You know, running into the line three times. It's almost like you want to waste a timeout to call you guys over like it was a basketball game and say, look, no fouls in basketball.
Here.
No penalties.
Right.
Jeez, we're just trying to go 8 yards to kick a 50-yarder to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You can't really waste them. They're so precious. I understand that. And you have more in you certainly have more in basketball. You have at least seven, I think you have. But my goodness, it's just that's such a breakdown, and that's a discipline thing. And you know what everyone's going to say when they analyze it that way? It's a coaching thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, you know, the Patriots don't do that.
Can you believe I texted you? I think today they just keep right on going. They don't miss a beat. They're 3-0. They're rolling, folks. I mean,
yeah,
it's unbelievable.
It's incredible. Well, they made a gamble, and a smart gamble, of course, because they paid them like $1 million with incentives,
mm-hmm.
$7 million. They gambled on Cam Newton. You know he's going to get in as good a shape as he can. You know he was healthy. If he's healthy and Cam Newton, my goodness. I don't think they could beat the Ravens or the Chiefs just yet, and their defense, according to my son, especially their secondary, hasn't played as well. You know, they lost a lot of guys in the front seven, as we've talked about, but their secondary is supposed to be the best in football, and they haven't played great. But you know what? They're in the mix. Why? Because they're always in the mix.
Always in the mix. They're always in the mix. Unbelievable. All right, Steve. So, you know, Miles Sanders again, only 18 carries. They called 50 dropbacks, and this was against a team who had given up 185 yards on the ground in two straight games. I mean, there's so much blame to go around. But again, I go back to the coaching staff. He had 70 yards in the first half, did Miles Sanders. And again, they went away from him again. And I don't know if it's the workload issue. Well, if that's the problem. They should have kept Jordan Howard, but they didn't do that.
Correct.
So they have Miles Sanders. What did you think of the play calling today?
I think you got to pound it more and more. I don't know if you guys are a little nervous. You're in the game. You're supposed to win. You have to think these guys know that Joe Burrow is very good, and they got a guy like Mixon, who they kind of contained. But they have A.J. Green. I mean, they got a couple of guys.
Sure.
They've got some weapons. So when you have the ball, I don't know why you wouldn't pound it if for no other reason than just to keep it out of. I mean, this Joe Burrow, he doesn't make mistakes.
Very good.
I think the interception that he threw was kind of a shovel pass even. That was the only interception he threw, I believe, in the first game. And you thought at the beginning, maybe
it was a shovel
play.
Yeah,
maybe it's a stupid play, a rookie mistake or whatever, but the guy learned so quickly. So I thought you would want to pound it, dominate ball control, dominate time of possession. And if anything, not that you fear Joe Burrow yet, although I think you will soon if you don't already, but just to keep the ball out of his hands. And, you know, maybe you'll tell me the line isn't what the line has been, but if you can gash them with the run, which you can gash them with the run, you got, and you kind of did it in the first half, frankly. I thought they should have kept going. I don't know if there's a panic button that says we got to throw it. I don't know. But that's kind of what it looked like, frankly. Even though you were in the game, you usually had the lead. I know it was back and forth. But it wasn't like you were going to get, I didn't think you were going to get shut down. Although I guess in the overtime, both teams got shut down.
Both teams got shut down. All kinds of punts. I think the Eagles had three or four possessions, all ended in punts, including the last one, which to me, it was about 30 seconds. What did you think of punting there? I mean, you're protecting against a loss. I get it. But don't you have to kind of play for the win in this situation?
I don't disagree. I don't know what the conversation is with Elliott. I mean, he kicked that 61-yarder of the Giants. I remember that one. It's not like it just made it, you know, I think it would have made it from 64, for example, or 63. I don't know. If you ask me, would I go game? Well, you're 0-2.
Right.
Now, maybe the analysis was not to lose. I think you talked about that before. If he misses from there, there's not much time left, but maybe it's one pass over the middle, and then their guy's kicking, you know, a 57-yarder or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but my goodness, you got to win some games. Again, the only good thing is they're 0-2-1, and the Giants are going nowhere. I don't think Washington's going anywhere. And Dallas, who is your main competition, is...
They should be 0-3.
They're 1-2. And very lucky. Yeah, imagine if they were. You know, the Eagles would almost be in first place. But I'll say it again. Their chance, I know everybody's going to kill them this week, and I'm certainly not saying they shouldn't, but their chance is still in front of them, but only because there's only going to be one team coming out of the NFC East. They might win it by default at 8-8. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think that's their best hope now, and everybody's going to put a happy face or try and say, you know, we're not out of it. And they're not out of it. This is the one division you can be in and not be out of it after three games. And so you're right. We might be laughing at the end of the year that the tie might have been an incredible thing because, as you said, they picked up. It's like a half a game in baseball or something.
Yep.
But they picked up something on the Cowboys.
Can you
today,
believe it?
And that's how sick this is. But right now, to me, the Cowboys, who have played incredibly well offensively and gave up 39 to Atlanta and whatever they gave up to Dallas today, they're in the mix because they got a good offense and they got a lot of weapons, and those CeeDee Lamb is starting to play better. Speaking of which, maybe you'll tell me to save this for another time, but did you happen to see Justin Jefferson, our guy who the Eagles let go and was picked right after the Eagles? Did you see what he did today, Justin Jefferson?
Yep.
Seven receptions, 175 yards. Look at the video of the 71-yard touchdown. He had 4 yards on the guy, and after he caught it, he still beat 2 guys to get the touchdown. I'm sorry they could have used him.
Yeah, you think? we're always going to connect him and Jalen Reagor.
Absolutely.
As far as their careers go. And Steve, if the Eagles make it to 8 wins this year, I'll give you my house. You can have the more. You can have the deed to my house because I don't think they're getting there, bro. But I appreciate you coming on as usual, pal. I'll catch up with you this week. And, of course, we have the podcast next Friday, and then we'll rock and roll. I appreciate it, bud.
Always a pleasure.
You too, Steve. Steve Callis on the Comcast Business Hotline.
Joe Stazak on 97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
My man, the legendary broadcasting talent, Don Tollefson, here to extol the virtues of a big tie today by your team, your town, your Philadelphia Eagles over the Bengals. I mean, Tolly, we were together at Fox in 08 when they tied last time with the Bengals and the Donovan game where he didn't know about overtime. I mean,
that was unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Can you try to put into words this mess?
It was more unbelievable.
Yeah, this mess. It was a mess.
Now, what we have to start with is, since you brought up the possibility of hot sisters being the only reason for enjoying a tie, a tie is like kissing your sister. Does have football origins, apparently dating back to the 1920s, when a man named Tom Hamilton was the coach at Navy, and that's how he reacted to a tie.
Oh my God!
And he went on to have a nice career as an AD, athletic director at Pitt. But you know, I think of all the things that typify what has happened with this team over the last 3 weeks in microcosm, and you've gone and pointed it out 100 times already tonight on another one of your great shows.
Thank you.
How does Matt Pryor do what he did? How does that happen?
That's a great question.
It's unbelievable. You know, and he's a guy that was going to play left tackle, was going to play right guard. Then he disappears. Then he's back. Then they move Herb. But then in a situation where there's no reason to even consider leaning a little bit and trying to get a jump. You're not running the ball. You're not trying to get a jump on pass protection. There's one thing you can't do in that situation at all. But, you know, Joe, I was thinking as we also had the Phillies disaster end mercifully today.
Yeah.
That in my 45 years of covering sports in Philly, I can't remember a time, and we've had our bad teams over the years, but a time when three of the four teams, thankfully the Flyers made a lot of progress despite our disappointment with the shutout loss in Game 7 and all. But I cannot remember when the fan base of loyal, best in the country fans have been angrier, with good reason, at the way organizations are run with three of our four teams.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable how decision making is apparently lacking in terms of intelligent decision making with a Matt Klentak, with a Howie Roseman, with a Josh Harris. You know, I'm willing to give Elton some more time.
Sure,
but
absolutely.
You look at the GMs there with, you know, the Calangelo thing and all. And I think Philly fans have to be just irate with tremendous reason. And I think Dylan had a great line. You got an awesome producer.
Oh,
and I
awesome.
Love it when he gets to chime in. But when he brought up the issue of, well, you know, the plan, what do they have a plan? what is the plan? And Joe Jackson, one of the great R&B singers of all time, put it this way: you can't get what you want unless you know what you want. You got to have a plan.
Yep.
You got to have a plan.
Sure.
And you know, it's so interesting that on a day where Jim Schwartz did a better job, although you talk about how easily the Bengals went downfield on that one drive. But then you look at what happened on the one where Carson scored, and he did a nice job with those run plays that he ended up really helping them and getting them the end zone with. But those two pass interference penalties were huge.
Yep.
They were typical Bengals historically as well as today and all. But when you have basically come back Wentz takes it into his own legs and gets in the end zone, you do have them on the ropes. And a team that's lost as consistently as they have has to face a two-point attempt to win the game.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
And then the thing that to me is most bizarre about what happened after that totally unacceptable prior penalty was when Doug said afterwards about, no, I'm not going to kick the field goal after the penalty. You give him the ball back. Well, he would have had the ball back with no timeouts. The field goal attempt would have taken some time off. But anyway, you can debate that all you want. But here's the thing that was mind-boggling. Doug said, I think something positive may come out of the punt. What is that? What is positive about basically raising the white flag? And confidence building, when a coach goes for something and really rolls the dice and, you know, I got you guys and I believe in you guys and I will do things because I believe in you guys. This is where if you're a player in the locker room after that game, you're like, I just don't understand what our coach is doing. And when he also said that I didn't want to go for two because I thought our offense was really rolling.
Right.
But without those penalties, they lose that game.
Yes, they do.
Those pass interference penalties, I don't think they tie that game and all.
No, they don't. Oh.
And then when you look at a couple of other issues real quickly,
sure.
The receivers that the Eagles could have had, the Jefferson thing today was unbelievable.
Yep.
Unbelievable and
yep.
all.
Yep.
And then to watch the Cowboys lose, which again puts us a half game out of first place.
Unbelievably.
DK Metcalf on the game winner for the Seahawks is an example of everything you want out of a young receiver coming into this league. And he was a guy you should have done anything you could have to try to get. But I just want to, when you talked about it earlier, Russell Wilson, 14 touchdown passes in 3 weeks. First Seahawk with, and they've had some good QBs over the years, 5 and 5 touchdowns in back-to-back games. And just, the character of Russell Wilson is something I think all of us who love sports should admire. And last week when they beat the Patriots in a great Sunday night game, he was interviewed by, I think, one of the best of the sideline reporters, Michelle Tafoya.
Oh, yeah.
And she interviewed him after the game. And he was so eloquent in expressing his feelings about his former Wisconsin teammate, James White.
Right.
Losing his dad when his mom and his dad were in the automobile accident. And Russell Wilson's humanity was on display in such a wonderful way. And then he did something. There's so many of those post-game interviews in all sports where, whether it was good, bad, or in between, the player just, they can't turn away quicker. You know, they turn away from the interviewer,
yep.
just win or lose, whatever the interview was about. And Russell Wilson sincerely looked right in the camera and said, thank you, Michelle. Go Hawks, man. And he's
just, unbelievable.
He's so likable.
Yep.
But I point that out tonight also because when he comes to the line of scrimmage, he feels, you know what? We're going to make the play we need to make. I got the guys around me I need. And now Carson just looks so bewildered. He looks so bewildered. And I think the only point I'd make about the Nick Foles thing today that I think is relevant is when he was quarterbacking the Eagles, there were a number of anonymous quotes from the locker room and not that ridiculous stuff that the players don't like Carson and
right.
they love Nick. But the one thing that was specific was that when Nick Foles steps in the huddle, we buy into it.
Mm-hmm.
We buy into it. And I don't think, and certainly after these 3 weeks, offensive players in that huddle are saying to themselves, well, you know, we got this. We got this. Because so many times we don't got this. And the mistakes, the overthrow of Miles Sanders, I mean, it's just becoming epidemic. And then you look in terms of the personnel decisions that Howie's made. How about John Lynch with the 49ers?
Yeah.
They got 10 starters out. And I don't care how bad the Giants are. They just go in there and put up a lot of points, and they have guys, you know, their next man up can play. The Eagles' next man up is not doing that a lot on either side of the ball, Joe.
Right. No, you're right, Tolly. So 30 seconds left. You know, the 3.5-point dogs to the Niners that you mentioned,
yep,
who are banged up.
Yeah.
For some reason, again, I said this past week, out of principle, I would have taken the Bengals. It's too big a line for the Eagles to lay. They're getting 3.5. That might seem a little light, but the Niners are banged up. How do you see this game playing out? Because it's the first of three very tough games before they get to the Giants.
I think they get successively tougher. I think the Niners will be tough. The Steelers will be much tougher. And the Ravens will be the toughest.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the problem that I think we're not going to hear about until another day or two. Are any of us shocked that Jason Peters and DeSean Jackson, week 3, already have injuries that may be costly? We know that the Dallas Goedert may have a high ankle sprain from all reports. But, you know, Greg Ward had a nice game. But DeSean is so important to this offense. And here's another inexplicable Doug situation. We don't use him in the first half against the Rams. Then we use them in the second half.
No targets.
And what was in the second half? Was it like 9?
He had 9 targets in the second half, yeah.
Right, but he should have had 18.
Yep.
9 in the first half, 9 in the second half. And I don't see how we win any of these next 3 games, but we may still be a game and a half back in the division. So,
can you believe it?
You never know. And it reminds me, I give Andy all the credit for his obviously greater success more recently. But during the years that he had the Eagles winning the division year in and year out, if you look at it in a lot of those years, when the schedule would come out in April and you picked winners and losers, you could say, okay, let's start with 6 or at least 5 against the Giants, the Redskins, and the Cowboys. and we're back to what should be an automatic 4, which cannot be more than 3 after that debacle in Washington. So I just think that this team is really, really unlikely to be anything but 0-5-1 in 3 weeks from now.
Yeah, Tolly, I'm with you, brother, and that's going to be a tough thing to swallow after 6 games, waiting all this time through the pandemic for at least, you know, the football to come. It's kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel, and now we're looking at, we're staring at 0-5-1. Hey, brother, appreciate it, man. Again, love to Heidi and Gabby and the kids and everything, and you're doing a great job. Appreciate you coming on. We'll do that podcast this week, pal.
Thanks, Joe, and tell Dylan he's doing a great job too, man.
Absolutely. Thanks, brother. Talk to you soon, man.
See you, man.
All right, buddy. Don Tolleson, the legendary Don Tolleson.
Joe Stazak on 97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
My man, I haven't talked to him in a while. I read his stuff all the time. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline right now. He wrote an article about today's game, talked a lot about Carson Wentz, still can't get out of his own way, has the worst quarterback rating in the league after 3 games at 63.9. Marcus Hayes, how you doing, my friend?
I'm well, Joe. How are you?
Well, I am good, buddy. Tough watch today. I'm sure it was for you as well. How can you put into words today's game, and where do you start with the blame? And then we'll get into some of the nuances of why they didn't go for 2 or go for the win or whatever. But where do you start with the blame for today's game?
Well, just to be clear, they never have a tough loss for me because I don't care if they win, lose, or don't play. the blame for the loss of the game goes at the feet of the quarterback. He played horribly again.
Yeah.
He had 2 more interceptions. And you know what's unsettling about it And again, I don't really have a horse in the raid. I'm not Royce. I'm not rooting for him. I'm not rooting for the team. I'm not rooting for Nick Foles, who threw three touchdown passes today in Chicago.
Yep.
But what's unsettling is after the game, he said, you know, they made a good play on the second one, and on the first one, it got batted at the line. The reality is the linebacker who caught the first interception was baiting him into throwing, and you never saw him.
Yep.
It would have been intercepted anyway. And the second one was exactly the wrong place to throw that ball. You can't throw that ball there. Zach Ertz was open on his left shoulder. Carson Wentz threw it behind his right shoulder at the defender. The defender caught it in self-defense. So if he's deluding himself that, you know, it's bad luck and, you know, the way the ball bounces, that's the most disconcerting thing about it, because Carson Wentz is a bad quarterback now. He might be the worst quarterback in the league right now.
Marcus, how is that possible? I know it's been a long time since that 11-2 run, but at least we know what he's capable of. And he kind of put the cape on last year. And I know that it was against bad football teams, but he kind of pulled them out of the basement into the playoffs last year, even with a lot of guys from the practice team. What has happened to him over the last, even just this past offseason?
Well, it's interesting that you use that terminology. He put the cape on. He actually did just the opposite. He took the cape off. He stopped trying to be Superman and understood that the only way he could win with the team around him is if he accepted what the offense allowed him and the rest of the team to do. And let's be very clear, while Carson Wentz managed them into the playoffs last year, he did so against a horrible group of teams down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he played better than bad teams, and the reason he played better is because he played football, not hero ball. And the pass to DeSean Jackson that was intercepted in the first quarter that ended the first drive, hero pass. He's going to jam it in there over a defensive line and inside of three defenders to the smallest receiver he has and the only good one. And he's going to, it was also a hospital ball. If DeSean Jackson had caught that ball, he'd have left the game even earlier than halftime when he did leave the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, you know, and again, the pass to Ertz, it was a footwork issue. His mechanics are atrocious right now. His mechanics have not been good since before the 2018 season, when Press Taylor, his current quarterbacks coach, had refined with John DeFilippo, his former quarterbacks coach, had started. His mechanics were unbelievable in training camp in 2018, and between rushing back, injuring his back, and playing on a bad knee, his mechanics have not recovered.
Marcus Hayes on the Comcast Business Hotline. Okay, Marcus, let's get to the nuances of the game. Doug Peterson decides, and he has done aggressive things, went for it on two last week early, and I think it was the second quarter, maybe the chart told him to do so. They score a touchdown with 21 seconds left, have an opportunity to go for two or to kick the extra point, send it to overtime. What'd you think of the call that Doug decided to elect to kick an extra point and take a shot in overtime?
He was right. They got the ball, what, three times in overtime?
Three times for 26 yards.
So, you know, he's right. I mean, he believed that his defense was better than Cincinnati's offense at that point. He was right. And they were. I mean, it's a non-issue. If they had not gotten the ball, if Cincinnati had, if they had been unable to get a touchback and a kickoff had been returned, if they had been unable to possess the ball some way, if they had, you know, been unable to stop the Bengals, then he would have been wrong. He gambled that his defense would hold, and it did. He was right. He did the right thing, forcing overtime, getting the ball back in the hands of his team who had the upper hand. And, you know, it didn't work out for them because his offense died. But, you know, there are a couple of things that we sort of like to forget. Number one, the reason that Brandon Brooks makes $9 million and Matt Pryor makes $900,000 is because Brandon Brooks is 10 times better than Matt Herbig or Matt Pryor.
Matt Pryor.
And the same thing with Nate Herbig at the left guard and Isaac Seumalo, $500,000 or $800,000 versus $5 million. Now, going for two, or, you know, the other thing I'm sure you want to talk about, you know, going for it on 4th and 12 with 19 seconds left or whatever, that becomes much more feasible when the highest paid portion of your football team is intact. That was not the case at that point. So I don't really have a problem with Doug taking, you know, the half point from the tie or not going for two in that situation, because not going for two puts you in that moment against that team, puts you in a better situation to win the game ultimately. And quite frankly, you know, no DeSean Jackson, no Dallas Goedert, no Jason Peters at that point. He'd been injured. And you've got Jordan Mailata protecting the backside of Carson Wentz. I mean, it's unlikely, but it's happened before, that half a point gets you into the playoffs.
I mentioned that earlier. You are correct about that. We're with Marcus Hage on the Comcast Business Hotline. So, Marcus, there's so many things we could talk about, and how poorly the team has played, from the quarterback to some of the coaching decisions. Now, they called 50 dropbacks today for Carson Wentz, and they did run the ball pretty effectively in the first half. I think Miles Sanders had almost 70 yards, but he ended up with only 18 carries. Do you think that they, once again, kind of tilted the field towards the passing game a little too much? Should they have run the ball more against a very vulnerable rush defense in Cincinnati?
You know, again, it's not the aggregate rushing totals that you need to look at. It's what happens on rushing plays on first and second down. They were loading the box up with eight people after DeSean Jackson left the game. I mean, that ends the conversation. When you have eight in the box and a $128 million quarterback, you throw the ball. You're especially when you're down two offensive linemen, both of your guards are out. And Jason Peters had a catastrophically bad game, and your best blocking tight end is gone. So again, when you look at the numbers, you have to think, okay, why did they make the decisions they made? They made the decisions they made because their best offensive lineman, Brandon Brooks, is gone for the year. Their best run-blocking lineman might be Isaac Seumalo. He's gone for the year. Their backups are horrible. Jason Peters is having one of the worst games of his career. And Dallas Goedert isn't there. He's your best blocking tight end. You know, he might be better now than Brent Celek ever was. So it's like having a sixth lineman. That's why the field started tilting. And when you have a quarterback who's making that kind of money, if you can't tilt the field for him, then you need another quarterback.
Well, Marcus, since you mentioned that, and I was going to mention it, we didn't talk last weekend, but I did read your article, and we're talking about another quarterback. He only took two snaps today, took three last week as a decoy. I think you mentioned in an article that's, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it might be time to start thinking about making a transition, or maybe trying to see what Hurts can do. Am I correct in that assertion? Do I remember your article correctly?
My assertion was Doug should do exactly what Doug did do this week. There's a package of plays in there for Jalen Hurts this week as a non-decoy. He touched the ball twice. He fumbled it the second time, or else we might have seen him a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe Jalen Hurts is a weapon. I don't think he's a replacement. I believe that if you see Jalen Hurts in the game and Carson Wentz is healthy, then Doug Peterson has given up on the season. Carson Wentz is still their best option to win, especially with a quarterback of Jalen Hurts' abilities as we've seen them in college.
Right.
I mean, he's not Joe Burrow.
Right.
And he's had no preseason and no real offseason.
Mm-hmm.
So to put him in that position is foolhardy, to give him the keys to the kingdom, but to give him a play where he actually has the option to pass the ball, to give him a series and a game that's out of hand one way or the other, I think that's, I mean, you don't make a pick in the second round and stash him twice like they did with Sidney Jones.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.